How could I forget to mention a bicycle is a good invention? Sitting there in a silent movie beside the only girl who really ever knew me. Happy days but sad to face, and heaven knows I'm on the case. Oh, how could I forget to mention the bicycle? Somebody told the world.
All right, so that's Red Hot Chili Peppers getting us started here with our Geared Up segment on Bulldog Live on the Pulse. Good, happy stuff to talk about. Sponsored by Goodale's Bike Shop with three locations in Concord, Hooksett, and Nashua, and you can visit them online at goodalesbikeshop.com. Get an idea of what they have for inventory, which is just huge. That's all I can say. Huge, 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 and huge. And, you know, again, great visit to their Nashua store on Saturday that I had, and that place is just massive. And some of the scientific stuff that goes into it, especially with their BG Fit services that they offer as well. Oh my gosh, it was really incredible the stuff that I learned on that, even just a proper saddle for you. And let me just give you this tip here, and Dave Topham joins us from the Bike Walk Alliance of New Hampshire. I'll just give you a tip. Before you pick any kind of a bike saddle off the shelf, talk to these folks at Goodale's first. They will give you a good, thorough explanation as to getting the right bike saddle or seat, you know, for your needs. Dave Topham, good to see you.
Good morning, Brian. It's great to be here again.
All right. And it's sunny today, too.
Yes. Great weather for bicycling for at least the next few days.
Yeah, I hope so. And I've been saying for a long time, can we get more than 24 hours of no rain?
I know. 6 out of my 12 rides this year have been washed out.
I know. I'm trying to do my bicycle commuting to work now. I'm instituting that summer plan. And yesterday was my first day to do it, and it was a no-go. Right from the start.
Well, keep the thoughts up. Do it again.
Yeah. All right. I will. And now that summer is, well, officially tomorrow, or no, Friday, but still, it's just like a summer day right now. People are going to be heading out more and more.
Yeah, that's a fact. And as we talked a little bit offline, you know, more people getting on the road, more bicycles, more interaction between motorists and bicyclists on the road. And we have to keep it safe. Visibility factor is a key thing, where people have to be seen on the road very clearly, wearing brightly colored clothes, following the rules of the road, and basically sharing the road. That's what it's all about.
Well, absolutely. And not only is it the law, but, you know, and people may see that quite a bit, but, you know, you just got to, you know, educate them as to why it's the law. And in fact, I went to Newport this weekend as well. And I know New Hampshire Highway Traffic Safety Administration likes to do some of their initiatives right there on Route 103 from Sunapee into Newport, and they'll put signs up, whether it be wear your seatbelt or whatnot. But now they've got signs up there that talk about the law, the 3-foot passing rule. And it's 3 foot for 30 miles an hour, 4 foot for 40, 5 feet for 50 miles an hour. And that's what a lot of information on the sign, you know, to read real quick.
Yeah, that it is. And those signs were trying to proliferate around the state and other regions as well. We know the background of it. There's concerns about where they are located. They have to be in the right of way, so many feet off the road. Safety considerations, so people don't drive off the road and hit the sign.
Right.
but anyway, that's something, you know, the awareness has to be increased, and we're doing what we can through state DOT, very helpful folks, and also the regional planning commissions.
Absolutely. And it's great to see that New Hampshire DOT has been really giving a good ear to a lot of these issues, and particularly with the new bridge going in Portsmouth.
That's true. And that's coming along on schedule. Just got the update on it yesterday, whereby Monday the center span was floated in. Keith Cota, chief project engineer, told me yesterday, hey, we're hooking up the 64 cables that are going to be doing the lifting and all the wires and control mechanisms. So that's coming along quite well.
Yeah, because the center span was just floated into place the other day,
Monday,
wasn't it?
As of Monday.
Monday, yep. Yeah. Wow. Yep. So it's coming along. That's good. Just in time for the summer tourist season.
Yep, and definitely for our major Seco Century event in September. 1,600 or so cyclists are probably going over that bridge in 2 days.
Good. And, you know, so we talk about that. We talk about being seen. You mentioned earlier about, you know, being visible. And, that of course, that's a cyclist's battle, is being visible because, you know, they're small compared to a car. I saw a couple of times this week with the gray overcast days that we've been having. I saw a couple of guys cycling around in the 7 o'clock hour at night, and they were wearing some darker color clothing. And on a tree-lined road, that is not good.
Definitely not good. You know, the law, the way it's written, need lights visible 300 feet from the rear, 300 feet from the front, from dusk to dawn, and also to wear something reflective on your body. It could be a helmet reflector or pant straps or whatever, but something mm-hmm. reflective on your body as well as the lights reflectors on the bike. And keeping in mind, it's one thing that shows up these days in daylight is the bright flashing headlight and the bright flashing taillight, LEDs. They run for many, many hours on batteries. And they can be very visible by day. So it's another visibility factor you can put into it. And the positioning on the road, just to mention, too, that bicycles should not be riding in the gutter. You know, right. You move out more toward the travel lane, move over when necessary to share the lane, let motorists go by without blocking the road, of course, provided the lane is wide enough. And it is legal, especially like in construction zones where things are really narrow, for bicyclists to take the lane, use the lane when necessary for safety's sake. You can't share a 11-foot wide lane with a trailer truck and stay within the 11-feet confine and do it safely. You need the 3 feet worth of clearance.
Exactly. In fact, I just saw a story online out of somewhere around Portland, Maine, where a cyclist got into some trouble, and there was a conflict between the cyclist and the motorist. It was a guy driving a big pickup truck towing a boat, and fortunately it was some local TV personality up there. The cyclist was going through a construction zone. It was one lane each direction on this bridge, and the cyclist was staying to the far right of the construction lane, not allowing enough room for sharing there. A conflict ensued, and it became really ugly really quick. Nobody got hurt, thank goodness, but it was scary for everybody involved. And the cyclist needed to be right down the middle. In fact, on the video footage that I saw of it, they put those sharrows right down the middle of the lane to say this is where cyclists belong.
That's true, and that's where they get the shared lane, the speed, the traffic conditions, a lot of things enter play for what you can play, where you can share or not share. But unfortunately, things do happen. It's not always the fault of the bicyclist or the motorist. It's kind of shared responsibility. And there was one fatality in Maine this past Friday morning. You probably heard about the Trek Across Maine, a three-day event.
Oh, my, yes. Yeah. This is where a tractor-trailer was passing at least one cyclist. Right. And when he came back in, I guess he might not have realized just how long his load was and how fast the cyclist was going.
Well, the investigation did come out. Not to dwell on that particularly, you got fun things to talk about, but mm-hmm. the eyewitness reports came about that the cyclist was being passed by the trailer truck, to be sure, and the trucker had already been passing many, many other cyclists for miles. There were like, 2,000 people on the ride. But it still came down that the cyclist weaved out of his lane, drinking from his water bottle, pedaling along with one hand, and veered out of a lane, and actually he hit the side of the truck that was passing at good clearance. And that's what triggered the crash and the fatality.
Oh, my.
So, again,
shared responsibility. Yep. So not the trucker's fault. See, initially I was wondering if it was the trucker
coming in
too soon.
I wonder that, too. I followed through the details, and it came up on WMTW for what it was.
Yeah, well, thank you for that update there. 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here on Bulldog Live. If you want to join the conversation, Dave Topham joining us from Bike Walk Alliance of New Hampshire on Geared Up segment brought to you by Goodale's Bike Shop. And speaking of lights, one more thing, because I want to talk about rail trails with you in just a minute. But speaking of lights, if you go into Goodale's Bike Shop, you can ask them about the flea lights, which are really cool because not only are these things really tiny and light, but they're bright as all can be, and they also are rechargeable too. So you don't even have to worry about batteries on them.
Lighting systems in general and the extra gadgets that are out there these days run an extreme long number of hours on a battery charge, rechargeable stuff included. It is phenomenal. You know, there's no reason not to have lights on the bike. They weigh next to nothing these days. They run for so many hours. And one of the key things to keep in mind, too, for headlights on bikes, unless you're off doing off-road riding in the dark trails or whatever, for the most part, on the road, you can actually see as the bicycle. You can see where you're going even at night. There's enough residual light, ambient light conditions around. But the idea is for you to be seen.
Yes.
And there, the blinking lights show up a whole lot better than that little white speck of light, even a bright one. The blinking headlights, the blinking taillights are much more visible day and night than solid light.
You know, and that's true. In fact, I did an experiment one time. Actually, I learned it, kind of learned it the hard way. And then I did an experiment, and it actually seems to work. Just the steady white light, the beam light, people would kind of, move along. They see this thing, so they can't really tell how fast you're going. But with the blinking light, it makes the motorist think, okay, there's something moving here. I don't know what it is. And it's kind of a foreign concept to them. So the motorist slows down and becomes very cautious really quick,
right,
which is safer for everybody involved.
Definitely.
So I like that idea. Rail trails. There's been some good discussions going around lately.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of activity there. And just mentioning the fact for bicyclists in general, if people are just getting into biking or families with children, they don't want to be on the public road. You know, we talk about cars sharing the road. Some people say, basically, I don't want to go there. I want someplace where it's safe, it's quiet, I don't want to deal with cars. Well, consider rail trails.
Yeah.
And here in New Hampshire, we have quite a collection. The ultimate goal is to connect from Salem up through Manchester, Concord, all the way to Lebanon, through what we have nicknamed the Granite State Rail Trail, which would be 115 miles total. It'd take a long time to build up all the segments, but one section at a time now are underway.
Yeah.
And subsequently, the activity most recently in the past month has been very heavy activity between Salem and Manchester.
Yeah.
Salem is getting underway. We have the group called Iron Horse Preservation Society, which is building the basic trail at literally no cost to the state or the taxpayers by simply recycling the old metal, the old rail, and they call other track material, OTM stuff that's there. They sell that, not just necessarily for scrap, but they find other uses for it. So they can get a little more money than basically scrap metal.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result, they pick up the ties, which we really like to have the ties taken out. DOT has a policy of not taking the ties out. If they pick up the rail, they leave the ties and someone else's concern.
Hmm.
But for the sake of the community, those of us who want to actually do a trail, getting rid of those ties is a problem because they're considered hazardous waste.
Oh, my.
They have to be hauled out of state for a price of about $5 a piece to have them go through a shredding operation either in upstate Maine or Pennsylvania. Just getting them there is a problem.
Sure.
That's a tremendous burden on the community. But with this Iron Horse operation, giving him a plug where I think it's due,
yes,
he factors into his job the value of the steel and stuff that he picks up, hauls the ties out as time allows, builds up a usable path with a compact gravel-type surface on it, turns over to the town, which is basically going to be on state property, of course, anyway, owned by DOT. And from there, the community and the friends groups of volunteers can maintain it, and hopefully in the high traffic areas like the Manchester-Lawrence corridor, to actually get it paved. So it serves the use of transportation cyclists. Those of us who ride bikes with skinny wheels on them, you know, 700 by 23s and the like, don't like gravel surfaces.
Right.
But for transportation, getting to work, the parking rides and everything, you know, it serves, we use the term, for everyone every day. So we can build it up. So Salem is coming on strong. Yesterday we just had a high-level meeting at DOT for resolving some issues referencing Londonderry.
Okay.
And it's all coming together fine and looking to work up, call it a package deal, for other sections of the state that might be able to use what we have in place. Because this was a brand-new concept. The idea of swapping old rail to build something, you know, you almost like you're getting something for nothing, but yet there is value to the steel at state properties. How do you swap that out for services? It's a totally new concept.
Well, that's where Iron Horse Preservation Society came in and really made that a reality, which I know is helping a lot with developing the Salem stretch. Windham and Derry are nice shape. They're connected. They just got connected, what, about 2 years ago, maybe? A year or two ago?
Right.
And so you can do that nice stretch, and then getting into Londonderry would be even wonderful too.
Londonderry had a town warrant article of $227,000 to pave a mile of it. And then this 8/10 of a mile approximately that Iron Horse is working on from Mammoth Road up to the airport, Harvey Road. That's the section they're working on. So basically, it's one section at a time. And then when there are gaps, and there are gaps, the public requests to fill the gaps. They say, why can't I get from here to there? Well, because of, well, find an answer. Connect it. We want to get there.
Well, that's good. And I know the Northern Rail Trail, they keep, every year, they make more progress. They're down into Boscawen now. And eventually, they're going to bring it down to the park and ride, maybe by the end of this year. There's some money and fundraising and matching, you know, grant opportunities that are available to it. So you get them down to the Hannah Dustin park and ride area. That would be really nice through there, too. Yeah,
they're making good progress. They've been doing about 2 miles a year using recreational trail program funds, which is a subset of another federal type program. And that is a compact stone dust type of a trail. But what's nice, it's about 54 miles long now.
Yeah.
It goes all the way to Lebanon.
And it is a great, and we talk about the rail trail, especially for people going out with their families, because I've got two kids. They like riding their bikes, and that's the place that I can do it with them. And in fact, a few years ago, when I got back into riding, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, it was like, okay, 2 miles was a lot for me back then. Now I do 23 miles each way, no problem going to work, but, you know, a couple days, 2-3 days a week. But, you know, it's a great place for people to get reacclimated with cycling again, and then they can set their goals up, because there's so many neat things to see along these trails, too, that you just don't see from the regular old beaten path.
That's 100% true, and the spin of it is it really helps the state in many different ways. First of all, it highlights some scenic areas that a lot of people don't know about in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The little mom-and-pop shops spring up along the way,
yes.
You know, the ice cream stands, the bicycle repair businesses, the pizzas, even with as an end-to-end type scheme put up between the Highland Lake Inn in Andover, going up to another inn just over the border in Vermont. So you go up one day, stay over inn, come back. It's like a B&B experience at both ends. And even in more congested areas, for example, in Manchester, you have the Hands Across the Merrimack Bridge, which is practically a rail trail, going into the Goffstown area, the Westley side, going out toward Goffstown. Mm-hmm. That area used to be an absolute pit.
Oh.
I mean, literally, the rail corridor was filled with debris, old tires, swampland, shopping carts, you know, just trash.
Sure.
You look at it now, it's beautiful. And the residents around the area then subsequently spruce up their property. Their property values go up. There's an interest. There's no more funny stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the rail trails, the more they're used, they become what we call self-policing. Because you have enough people out there, they watch out for each other. And they make sure bad things don't happen. Where if you have this abandoned corridor where kids could go out there and do drugs or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
they're out of sight, out of mind, and bad things happen. But you open up to the public, you know, people see stuff that they never saw before, and it benefits the community. People who have said, oh, not in my backyard. There's going to be all sorts of crazy stuff going on because those bicyclists are going to break into my house and steal my television and haul it down.
I heard it last year in Boscawen.
And after projects are actually done, they say, gee, I want to use that. I don't want that fence there anymore. Take the fence down. I want to go out there and use it myself. So things turn around after it's put in place.
Yeah, they sure do. In fact, you talk about businesses taking advantage of it. About a week or so ago, I saw an article online. I think it was through the Northern Rail Trail Facebook page. That the Danbury General Store, new ownership, newly revamped store, and it's right on the trail at the intersection of Route 4 and 104 in Danbury, and they're catering a lot to the traffic that's on that rail trail there.
Yep. It definitely is a win-win situation. And as we get more of these rail trails out and publicized, we're working through the Bureau of Trails, Department of Resource Economic Development for the tourism aspects.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tourism magnet.
And great snowmobiling opportunities in the winter as well.
And on most of it. You know, some of the trails are restricted. ATVs are restricted. Motorized stuff in the summertime are restricted. Except on the non-transportation enhancement funded trails. They're allowed.
Oh. Like
in North Country. And some of the ones even here in the Rockingham County area.
Okay.
But ATVs and the dirt bikes are not allowed on trails that are funded through federal money.
And a lot of these trails are already marked anyway. So,
that's right.
I mean,
it's no surprise.
Yeah, they're usually at most crossings and at trailheads and so on and so forth. So,
you find out
real quick.
Yeah, we do have the ATV park up in northern New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably read about just this past weekend, there was the ribbon cutting of the 1,000-mile
yes.
worth of trail. So, there's a lot of options, a lot of options around the state.
There sure is. So it's all exciting and fun stuff. Dave Toppin from the Bike Walk Alliance of New Hampshire. By the way, one of the things that we've been talking about for a few weeks was the Traffic Skills 101 course. That's already occurred. How did it go?
Well, there were two traffic skills courses this year. The first one was run over in Portsmouth. And then the second one here in Concord at our Bike Walk Alliance office on Regional Drive. The one here in Concord, I attended for the 2 days. There were 2 6-hour sessions, 6 on Saturday, 6 on Sunday. We had 5 people elected to go through the whole thing.
Wow.
And subsequently 5 and 6 instructors for the road activity. Everyone said they got a lot out of it. Paula Bedard was the chief coordinator, and she was on your show a week or two ago. And it all came across quite well. People said they learned a lot. They learned tricks and handling techniques that they never heard of before, and building up a lot of confidence for handling a bicycle on the road as a vehicle, and that they have a place out there that they shouldn't be really afraid of if you know what you're doing.
There you go. Good. How do people get in touch with the Bike Walk Alliance of New Hampshire?
Best simple way, check out our website, BWANH, BikeWalkAllianceNewHampshire.org.
All right.
It's there, and contact information, phone numbers. We'll gladly send out information. And just to say, we work hand-in-hand with, obviously, the Granite State Wheelman Bicycling Club,
mm-hmm.
which is recreational cycling throughout the state. Memberships with it start at just $15 a year. The Bike Walk Alliance includes a Granite State Wheel membership because they even advocates and those pushing legislation and fun stuff and building rail trails, we still like to get the discounts and like the good ales.
That's right.
10% discount on all the good ale stores and some of the other shops in the whole region. So basically it's a mutual relationship between Granite State Wheelman and Bike Walk Alliance. We have a good time doing it.
You sure do. Well, again, thank you, Dave, for stopping in today. Thank you to Goodale's Bike Shop for making this possible. And again, if you join the Bike Walk Alliance of New Hampshire, Granite State Wheelman, you do get a 10% discount at Goodale's Bike Shop. So,
Many families joined even without joining us on the rides. They just like what we're doing.
Yeah.
Like, get the discounts. You got a fleet of bicycles. How can you go wrong?
And, most of those discounts apply to the accessories, not necessarily to a new bicycle. Kind of hard for the shops to discount those, but they do on the helmets, on the lights.
Parts, accessories, sometimes services, clothing.
Yep.
There's definitely more profit margin on that. The bikes don't have much of a profit margin on it.
No, they really don't. I understand. All right. Well, Dave Toppin, thank you very much. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you much.
All right.
Enjoy.
And next week, we'll be talking with one of the folks from Goodale's Bike Shop right here on our Geared Up segment on Bulldog Live on the Pulse, goodalesbikeshop.com. Bulldog Live continues on the Pulse. Bulldog Live here on the Pulse at 1-866-823-1077 as we cover all kinds of topics here in our 2 hours together every weekday, 10 a.m. to noon, right here all across New Hampshire and at WTPLFM.com, where you can listen in online and tune us in on one of those apps, the TuneIn Radio app. You can find us there. I get that question asked from time to time, so I figured I'd tell you. When we talk a lot about things that we do on Second Amendment Tuesdays and Pro Gun Fridays here on Bulldog Live, we take a step back sometimes from some of those heavy issues that are some of them even political. Take a look back at some practical things, too, in self-defense or even just trying to get yourself into a situation where you're not into a bad situation. Did I make
Did I make sense on that one? Where you try to avoid bad situations. How about that one? Good. Well, it is summer, and, well, it will be in 2 days officially, but feels like it now, and it's good, too. Oh, I'm loving it. But anyway, a lot of people traveling for their summer vacations. Well, you know, New Hampshire has a very low crime rate, and we're very, very fortunate for that. But that tells you that anywhere you go, that state is going to have a higher crime rate because ours is the lowest in the country. So what do you need to be aware of when you're traveling, especially I'm thinking big cities, right? Well, Kathy Steinberg is a personal safety expert, and she has taught a number of personal safety courses and is the author of The Fabulous Girl's Guide to Being Fearless. And she is joining us now on Bulldog Live to talk about safety while traveling. And Kathy Steinberg, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
All right. So you have a lot of good stuff on your website at KathySteinberg.com, and we can get to all that in a moment. But, yeah, summer vacation's coming up, and people want to, you know, leave all their troubles behind, but, you know, we want to avoid them getting into trouble too, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's huge. You know, sometimes when people go out on vacation, they kind of leave the common sense things that they'll do at home, you know, and go about their way, not following just common sense safety precautions.
Okay, what would be some of those?
Well, the first thing I tell people when they go on vacation is this. Make a copy, especially if you're going to go overseas or you're going to need a passport. Go and scan all your travel documents, scan your identification, scan your passport, scan all your travel docs, and upload them into your email. That way, if you lose it, or God forbid, they're stolen from you, you still have access. You can print them out and, you know, travel and get your way back home.
Well, you know, you think about that with your passport, because without your passport, you are nobody in another country's eyes, really. You know, think about having that stolen, which very easy from a pickpocket, or maybe you left it behind at a store that you were shopping at, or any number of reasons on the tour bus. And there you are. You're stuck. Oh, my gosh. What am I going to do? And good luck trying to get it back.
Right. And what I tell people, too, is don't have all of your money sources in one place. Don't carry all your credit cards with you. What you need to do is keep at least one credit card, maybe in the safe in your room or somewhere safe away from your person. That way, if you do lose your stuff or if your stuff does get stolen, you have a source of money. You definitely don't want to get trapped somewhere and then not have the ability to pay for something, for some other tickets, or you know, you just don't want to be stuck without money when you're out.
Yeah, and maybe even not traveling with very many credit cards, because how many people may have, say, five cards, for example? Do you really need all five, especially those store discount cards, too, you know?
Yeah, very smart. Keep your money sources not all together. For instance, if you've got, and a lot of times we travel with a lot of cash, because it's just easy sometimes to whip out your cash. Not everywhere it takes, you know, certain credit cards. Only keep a few dollars at a time, let's say in your pocket or in your purse, you know, somewhere where you can quickly, like a little pocket on the outside of your purse where you can quickly access it, and it's just a couple bucks, so that you don't have to open your wallet in front of these people and show them exactly how much money you actually do have on your person. And then every time you use it, just go ahead later on and replenish, you know, with another couple, 20, 30 bucks. And that way, if they go to take anything from you, they'll reach for the place where they saw the money and possibly leave your real stash alone.
Aha! Good trick. I like that. Kathy Steinberg joining us here, personal safety expert. She's an experienced speaker on women's safety. And, you know, you talk about especially women who have to travel alone, and that happens a lot, you know, whether for business purposes or maybe even for leisure purposes. What do people need to know about traveling alone?
Well, I'd like for them to stay on the beaten path. Don't stray too much, because if you're not familiar with the area, chances are you may end up somewhere you don't want to be, and you don't want to be alone. And so stay with a group of people or stay within the well-populated areas. And also, there's online resources and forums where you can go on And you can read up a little bit on the city where you're traveling to, and they always have like a caution section where other people who have just come back from the travels there have written about their experiences, if they've been robbed or if they've been scammed. And a lot of times people will post up what they've already encountered in an effort for you to not, you know, to steer clear from it.
Ah, or if you're trying to map out a route, what neighborhoods to avoid, perhaps.
Very smart. And you know what? It's always smart. Always be prepared. Being prepared, you can never go wrong when you're prepared. Well, and a little preparation in advance will save you a lot of heartache in the end.
You know, a lot of people think that crime will occur at night. Is that true?
Although statistically, a lot of times, yes, but it can occur at any time. And so you should always be prepared. And you should always be cognizant of where you're at and what your surroundings are.
All right. So is there any part of the day where it's more likely to happen, say lunchtime in the middle of the day or nighttime in some back alley somewhere?
Again, logically, the evening is time when most crimes do occur, only because they have the cloak of darkness. So it's easier for somebody committing a crime to be able to get away and hide, and the same goes true everywhere. But if you go to certain areas where, you know, there's a lot of poverty, that can happen basically at any given time. It all depends on you yourself. I tell people, you know, if you've got a lot of jewelry or you're a person that walks around with that, just don't. Leave it home. You don't want to lose anything while you're out, and you don't want to call it extra attention to yourself. And you might go to an area that you might be what appears to be the wealthiest person there, so you'd be more likely to be targeted.
Ooh, yeah. How about even with smartphones now? I'm hearing that there is a tremendous increase in thefts of these smartphones.
Right. Well, smartphones, what happens is this. One, the technology is great, and they can get a lot of money for them later on in the black market, but what smartphones do for us is it dumbs us down slightly when we're out in public. We tend to look down at them and sit there, and we're on our email, we're surfing the net, we're not paying attention to what's happening around us. And that is prime target for being victimized. Every criminal that I ever spoke to, that is the person they're looking for, the person who is unaware and completely distracted and not even aware of what's going on around them.
Wow, incredible. 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here. Kathy Steinberg joining us on Bulldog Live, personal safety expert. She's also the author of The Fabulous Girl's Guide to Being Fearless, which you can find at kathysteinberg.com. You know, one of the other things is we're getting ready to send children off to college, too. I think everyone's pretty much got their colleges picked out, but what are some things looking at for parents who are sending their kids off to college? What could they look for as far as aren't colleges required to report crime statistics?
Yes, I tell everybody to go and look up the Gene Cleary reports for their or the Cleary Act reports for the school that they're considering. The Cleary Act is it was enacted because a young girl named Jean Cleary was raped and murdered in her dormitory on the college campus. And so they enacted legislation to require the schools to do continue and keep statistical database of all the crimes that happen on campus and in the surrounding areas around campus and surrounding areas around the dormitories that are off campus. And that way you can see what the crimes have been in that area for the past 3 years. They're required to keep 3 years' worth of crime statistics.
Wow. And the Cleary Act is spelled C-L-E-R-Y for people to know. And this is some things that people need to be aware of, including, what they can look for, I guess, and where else could they get maybe safety and security information from their college? Would they be able to get it from, say, the campus police or some administrator's office or what?
Right. From the Cleary Report, most campuses have campus police or campus security. You can get some security advice from there, and usually it's listed on the website. In the book, I have 2 chapters on college safety and campus security because it is so important. You know, it's the first time we give our kids that kind of freedom, and a lot of times they act in ways, not intentionally, but they don't use the smartest thought process when it comes to deciding what they're going to do, and they put themselves at risk. And in order for them not to put themselves at risk, you kind of just have to let them know of all the dangers and things that they should be looking out for and things they should be avoiding in order to keep themselves safe.
Now, you know, 1 in 4 women, as you state right on your website, according to the FBI, 1 in 4 women will be the victim of a crime in her lifetime. So odds are pretty high that you can get into trouble pretty quick through no fault of your own.
Right. It's all awareness is key to identifying an attack and being aware of your surroundings in order to recognize there's a problem. And that way you can do whatever you need to do to avoid that situation and keep yourself safe.
Now,
it's awareness.
What would be some self-defense courses that women could take?
Well, my background is in martial arts. I love martial arts, and I recommend it. I highly recommend it to help you understand the use of your body and how you can use every part of your body to defend yourself if you have to. It also raises confidence and awareness. But there's plenty of other things that they can do because I understand some people just aren't going to do martial arts. And so there's certain weapons that you can carry on your person in order to defend yourself if you have to. And there's certain moves that you can, you know, practice and that I describe in the book that you can practice at home, that you can perfect. And in a time of crisis, you can quickly do, you know, something really quick and sting somebody in the eyes and in the facial region. And have them blink and hold their face and recoil just long enough for you to get away. That's all we're looking for, is for you to get away safely.
Well, that's it. And you talk about unarmed defensive tactics, armed defensive tactics, both non-lethal as well as lethal. And, you know, looking at this in your I also see on your website, Mommy Be Safe. What is that?
Well, I teach mothers, and I have certain courses where mothers, and I teach mothers and new mothers and parents of kids and young kids what to do in order to keep themselves safe, whether it's home safety, whether it's teaching your children how to deal with bullies, whether it's, you know, a mother, when she's going out and she's got her kids, the last thing she's thinking about is her surroundings and what's happening because she's worried about this kid running off and that one doing that. And so it's certain little safety tips that I give them so that they can be aware and keep a presence of mind to, even though they're dealing with their kids, but also to understand that they still need to pay attention to their surroundings and what to look for and any signs of danger they should be keeping away from.
All right, very good. The Fabulous Girl's Guide to Being Fearless, What Every Girl Should Know by Kathy Steinberg. You can go to kathysteinberg.com. You've got links to it right to Amazon where people can get the book. And, you know, very, very good information that I think every woman should know.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking a stand on this issue.
All right. You're welcome. You take care and good luck.
Thank you. Alrighty. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Bulldog Live continues here at 1-866-823-1077 as Bulldog Live continues on The Pulse. So we've been covering a lot of things here on Bulldog Live over these 2 hours together, and I still have a few more minutes to get one more topic in. You know, we talked about the gun rights rally in Concord, which was counter-protesting the gun grabbers and Bloomberg and company, which this is one of the funniest moments in what happened yesterday. Hat tip to Tony Chanella of the Concord Patch for this audio.
I'm going to read some more names before we continue. Victor Bonilla Baez, age 27, killed with a gun on March 22nd, 2015. In Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Regina Hunziker, age 59, killed with a gun on March 22nd, 2013.
That went on for like a whole hour. It was great. It was funny. Yeah, they got to see that we outnumber them. That's for sure. We, the responsible gun owners. Now, I was talking about liars, you know, in Congress and in the governor's office and so on and so forth, and the New Hampshire Attorney General's office and the like. And it's just great. It really is, looking at all these, you know, from Marco Rubio to Kelly Ayotte lying about the amnesty bill and why it's good for the economy when the CBO says it's going to drive down American wages, and Kelly Ayotte sends out a press release saying, yeah, it's a good thing for our economy. I mean,
Really unbelievable stuff. I begin to wonder if I live in a parallel universe sometimes. And then we have, this is great, because in the legislature, the only business that's really about left right now is the budget. And tomorrow's the deadline as to whether there's going to be Medicaid expansion in New Hampshire or not between that conference committee. And folks, I got to tell you, you know, I've talked about this before. Medicaid expansion in this state, you want an income tax? You get Medicaid expansion because the federales, you know, are not going to keep any of their promises. That's for sure. So last night, the House negotiators came up with a so-called compromise. Oh, well, then just let us do Medicaid expansion for 3 years and then it'll expire. Oh, yeah, that's good. You know how many politicians, every single politician knows that that would be political suicide if they agreed to that. Because what'll happen after 3 years? First of all, folks, what the government giveth, the government can and will taketh away. That's number one. Number two, no politician is ever going to want to see Medicaid expansion go by the wayside because that will be political suicide because nobody will want to vote for it. It would be like taking away Social Security. It would be the same thing. So I emailed my own senator, Bob O'Dell, last night to ask him, please do not support Medicaid expansion. The outcomes are bad, and the financial ramifications for New Hampshire are even worse. He wrote back and says, this is the discussion that we're having right now is about implementing the study committee on that, to which Senator Peter Bragdon issued a statement yesterday saying that unlike the House, we cannot agree to a plan that takes the legislature out of the process and may allow a fundamental redesign of the state's largest and most expensive program to go forward by default. So he really wants to make sure that there's a study in place before we go forward on this big giant leap over the cliff. So please contact your senators to make sure that they don't take that leap over the cliff. They need some positive reinforcements from you. Bulldog Live continues on the Pulse. We'll tear apart the CBO's report on the illegal alien amnesty bill and Senator Ayotte's claims about how this will be good for the economy. Money Basics replay coming up after WMUR News Live. Bob Littman will be joining Bob Labelle live from the road from 1 to 2 as well.